Just to summarize, in the 10th chapter, so far we have studied, Bhagavan Sri Krishna tells us that please listen to my words again. What he says is that nobody knows my origin, not even the gods in heaven, not even the rishis, nobody knows. But I am unborn and I am the Lok Maheshwaram, I am the Lord of the entire universe. And whatever has been created, starting from Brahmaji, the creator, all the way down to the rishis and to all the beings, have been emerged from me, as I am the origin of that. And then with Prakriti, working through Prakriti, this whole universe was created. And he says, wise people, how do they know me? By constantly remembering me, by discussing with each other, enlightening each other, guiding each other. And such people enjoy talking about me, listening about me, and then I then give them guidance. I then help them, giving them wisdom, giving them knowledge. And the darkness of ignorance I remove as the light of the sun. So Bhagavan says, I am the one who ultimately gives them the wisdom. And then last week, Pankaj had covered four shlokas, Arjuna's questions, where Arjuna in the 12th verse says that you are the Supreme Lord, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, and you are the ancient Shashvatam Purusham Divyam, and the beginning of all beings, and you are all pervading. And who says that? He says, you yourself have told me that, and all the rishis, Narada, Devala, Vyasa, all of them have said that, and I have heard from them. And I believe that is true. If you have said it and all the rishis have said it, obviously it is the truth. But who is the one that knows you? You yourself said even the gods in heaven, the demons, nobody knows you. It is only you who know yourself, Bhagavan. So how am I to know this truth when you alone know it? None of the rishis, none of the gods know it. And I am very anxious to know this truth of who you are, what is your true nature. So we shall see how Arjuna then expresses his eagerness to learn this knowledge of knowing not only who God is, but the origin of this whole universe and how the world came into being and how one should take this knowledge and function in the world. And Arjuna periodically asks Bhagavan Sri Krishna questions. So here it is a fairly long question of several verses where he has first praised the Lord about his glory, his immense power and all that. And then also that no one knows you except you yourself. So only you yourself can reveal your true nature. So that is where we are today. So we'll do verse number 16. I'll chant and Niru will chant after me. And then we'll all chant together. Vaktum arhasya sheshena.
Vaktum arhasya sheshena.
Divya hyatma vibhutayah.
Divya hyatma vibhutayah.
Yabhir vibhuti bhir lokan.
Yabhir vibhuti bhir lokan.
Imam stvam vyapyatishthasi.
Imam stvam vyapyatishthasi.
So all together, verse number 16. Vaktum arhasya sheshena. Divya hyatma vibhutayah. Yabhir vibhuti bhir lokan. Imamstam vyapyatishthasi. So Bhagavan Sri Krishna said, Arjun tells Bhagavan Sri Krishna that vaktum arhasi. Arhasi means you should. For vaktum arhasi, you should tell me asheshena. Shesha means leaving something out. Ashesha means leaving nothing out. So in complete, in detail, not leaving anything out, you should tell me what? He's saying it in a request, not as an order, but as a request that you are the only one who can tell me what. Devya hi atma vibhutaya. He means indeed, when something is certain. He says, you please tell me your atma, your divya vibhutis. Divya atma vibhuti. So all your divine manifestations, how you manifest in the world and how this world is a manifestation of your divinity, please tell me totally, completely in detail without leaving anything out. And he also says that please tell me yabhi. Yabhi is the third case. By which, by what kind of vibhutis in this world, in this loka, imam, lokan, tvam vyapya tishthasi. Vyapya means having pervaded this whole universe, this whole, not only this universe, but all these 14 worlds. How tvam tishthasi? How do you stay in this universe, pervading everything and yet not visible to us? So that is the glory of this whole creation, that even though Bhagavan is everywhere, he is the creator, yet we do not see God. So how am I to know you? How am I to see you? That is Arjuna's request, even though you are pervading everything. So as we have heard many times before, Bhagavan is the only one who can reveal his nature, as Arjuna says. Only you can, because nobody else knows you. Rishis, gods, nobody knows your origin. Then we say, then how are we to find out? You know, if Bhagavan alone can tell, then let me wait. One day maybe Sri Krishna will come to my house and then sit down and tell me like he told Arjuna. But we don't need to wait for Sri Krishna or Ram or Jesus or Buddha to come and tell us, because the Vedas, the scriptures, are Bhagavan's breath. That's what the Vedas are said to be, the Lord's voice, to be his breath. When the Lord breathed out, the Vedas manifested. And the Vedas are not created by a human being. It is not a creation of one author or many authors who sat down and wrote all these thousands and thousands of verses. They are called Shrutis because in these rishis, these great sages, in their deep meditation, they connected with the higher, with the totality. And these verses were revealed to them in their meditation, and they completely remembered it because their mind was very pure at that time. And so whatever they heard, they then came out of meditation and revealed it to their disciples, who then passed on, they learned it, then they memorized it, and then they passed on. In the olden days, the Vedas were memorized. People knew thousands and thousands of verses. But And in those days, people lived in the forests, they lived in the mountains, in the Himalayas, they had very, very stable life, very comfortable life. But as the town started growing, more population started increasing, life became more complicated, then it was hard for people to memorize thousands of verses. And that's so Sri Vedvyasji, Bhagwan Vedvyasji, whom we owe a great debt of gratitude, he is said to be an incarnation of Lord Vishnu himself. Vedvyasji then organized the Vedas into four: Rig Ved, Sam Ved, Yajur Ved, and Atharva Ved, and into different sections based on the, you know, some of them were related to the prayer, some of them were related to nature, some of them were related to the nature of God. And then the fourth one, the Upanishad, is the one that is the highest knowledge of who God is and what is Brahman. So all this was organized by Ved Vyasji, and in his lifetime he did phenomenal work. There were so many other works. The entire Mahabharata, of which Bhagavad Gita is a part, 100,000 verses he composed. So that is how the knowledge came. So that's what they say, you need to read the Vedas, or the Bhagavad Gita is said to be a summary of the Upanishads. And Bhagavad Gita was revealed by Bhagavan Sri Krishna himself to Arjuna. And then Bhagavan talks in the Uddhav Gita, he talks to Uddhav. Ramchandra ji spoke to Lakshmana in the Lakshman Gita. So in the Srimad Bhagavat. So there are many places where this knowledge is given, in the Ramayana and everywhere. So that's what we say, we don't have to wait for God to personally come. we can get this knowledge. And in our case, the Bhagavad Gita, we owe a debt of gratitude to Pooja Gurudev, Swami Chinmayananda ji, because of whom we have been able to get this knowledge. And so that's what he says, that you can get it from all these masterpieces, all these scriptures. So the example they give is, suppose there is an older individual and you go to visit a hospital or maybe an orphanage or a dharamshala or something like that, and you find this older individual walking around, and you ask who is this man? They say, oh, he's the founder of this place. He started this institution with nothing, with no money, and with his own effort, how he raised funds and how he built this huge, you know, hospital or this, you know, facility. It's a wonderful job he has done. So others can tell you about how this came into being. But if you really want to know how this place was built, what was the hardships encountered, you go and ask that person himself. You say, can you tell us, how did you start this place? What were the problems you encountered? How it has become such a great place? And so similarly, Arjuna asks Bhagavan Sri Krishna that, tell me, there are two things he says. He says, yoga e vibhutaya. So yoga and vibhuti, in different places, yoga means different things. Yoga means the physical activities. Yoga means uniting with God. Here, Gurudev tells us yoga means how you are immanent, how you are everything in this universe you are. That is yoga. And vibhuti is how you transcend it. Means you are beyond this 14 worlds, beyond this universe, beyond space. So you are not only in this universe visible, but you are invisible. You are beyond it. And so that is why he says, yoga and vibhuti, I need to know in detail, not leaving anything out. Please tell me that. So example Gurudev gives in his commentary is electricity. Now, if you want to see electricity, you see it in the bulb, or you see it in the fan, or you see it in the air conditioner or the heater. So that is the visible, the immanent manifestation. But is that all electricity is? No, electricity is much bigger. It starts from the place, powerhouse where it was generated. It is in all the wires. We don't see electricity. So it is not only immanent, visible, it is transcendental. We cannot see it. Plus, there is so much electricity in the whole world, which is so much more than all the appliances that are visible. So similarly, the visible universe is there, but Bhagwan is the source of it, and it is beyond it. It is transcendental. That means it goes beyond it. So how are we to know it? So they say through faith and through intellect. So first of all, one must have supreme faith, that if it is written in the scriptures, if it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, if it is mentioned in the Bible, in the Quran, in the Buddhist teachings, then it is a manifestation of the Lord himself. So God himself has appeared and taught us this knowledge. So one should have faith. And then what they say is you require a subtle intellect. One intellect is one that sees everything. Okay, I see with my eyes the light, the computer, you know, I see the people, the things. But then there is what's called a subtle intellect. The intellect which has been guided by the guru, by the teacher. And when the right knowledge is there, that when that intellect with that right knowledge investigates with faith, with supreme faith, with a clear understanding, that's why correct understanding is very important. That's why one has to go to a teacher and listen from the teacher correctly and then think about it. And so that, and then try to abide in that. So that understanding which comes through right knowledge and with faith is called a subtle intellect. And so it is very important to clearly understand, not be confused, not confused. Is this right or that right? Is this what it, I do believe this, I don't believe this. So that confusion, as long as you have, and you don't know what you are doing, where you are going, then you are likely to make mistakes. So that's why Bhagavan says that the knowledge has to be very clear. And that's why a teacher like Pooja Gurudev, Swami Chinmayananda, or the other acharyas who come here, Swami Ishwarananda and Vimalji and all, so learning from them, we should get this knowledge. Talking about confusion, this old couple was driving on the road. The man was driving and the wife was sitting beside him. He was a little older. And so she was watching, and suddenly she saw that he went through a red light. So she said, what happened? Why didn't he see? Maybe he missed it. And then a second light, red light came. She said, surely he'll stop now. And he went through that red light too. So she was really worried. What's wrong? She looked at him, and before she knew it, he went through a third red light. So she said, honey, don't you know you just went through three red lights? He said, oh, am I driving? The wives are saying, what old? My husband does it even now when he's not that old, goes through red lights. But the, so one has to know what we are doing. You have to have the right knowledge before you proceed on this path. So similarly, that's what Bhagavan Sri Krishna said. That's what Arjuna says, that you please tell me so that my wisdom, my understanding should be clear. So this is verse number 16, and then Arjuna will continue his request to Bhagwan. Very, very beautiful verses as to how one should approach a teacher. When you approach a teacher, it should be with humility, it should be with faith, and it should be with an eagerness to learn, an eagerness to know. If one goes with arrogance, then knowledge is not possible. If you think, I already know it, I don't need to learn anymore, I've already heard a lot. They say you should keep listening to the teacher until you attain enlightenment. If you have attained enlightenment and you are an enlightened master like Raman Maharishi or Gurudev or Jesus or Buddha, then you don't need to listen. If you have not reached that, please keep listening. Whenever you have an opportunity, we have so many wonderful teachers who come, and listening to teachers, reading the books, you know, but get the right literature, get the right material. You know, when you even read the Bhagavad Gita, get authentic commentaries, not, you know, anybody's commentary written by anything. So listening is very important, and it should be done until you have attained enlightenment. That is very important. If you have attained enlightenment, then you don't need to listen. Then you become a teacher. You know, then you become a spontaneous expression of knowledge. But until then, please keep on listening. That is the message of this shlokas. So verse number 17, Arjun says, Katham vidyamaham yogin.
Katham vidyamaham yogin.
Tvam sada parichintayan.
Tvam sada parichintayan.
Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu.
Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu.
Chintyosi bhagavanmaya.
Chintyosi bhagavanmaya.
Together. Katham vidyamaham yogin. Tvam sada parichintayan. Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu. Chintyosi bhagavanmaya. So Arjuna says, katham. Katham means how. Vidyam, aham. How am I to know? Oh, yogin. He calls Bhagavan Krishna yogin. Yogin has two meanings. One is karma yoga, because Bhagavan Sri Krishna was the example of karma yoga. His whole life, whatever he had on this earth, he always helped people, always without any arrogance, without any, his life was full of service. He even was driving Arjuna's chariot, was a chauffeur, even though he was the king of Mathura. That's number one. Other yogin is that he had the Maya Shakti. He had the yoga power because he was the Lord himself who had appeared on this earth. So that's why he says, he calls him the yogin, the supreme Lord who has appeared on this earth with this wisdom. And yogin also means yogi, the one who is always joined. So Bhagavan Sri Krishna always was connected with his divine nature, always was joined. So he always manifested the divinity. So he says, Katham vidyama aham yogin, O yogin, O Bhagavan, how am I to know Tvam, you? Sada parichintayan. Sada means always. Parichintayan means meditating upon you. How can I constantly meditate upon you? So constantly meditate, you know, say somebody says, I get up in the morning, meditate 20 minutes, half an hour, maybe 1 hour. Sada means how am I to meditate 24 hours? That's what Arjuna asks. Sada parichintayan. And his next question is, Keshu, keshu cha bhaveshu, means in what kind of aspects, what kind of forms, chintyosi, you are to be thought of, Bhagavan Maya. In what kind of aspects and forms are you to be thought of by me? So he's using a passive voice instead of saying, how am I to think about you? He says, how are you to be thought of by me? So that is the poet's way of expressing that. So that's why he says, how am I to know about you constantly? How am I to meditate? And in what aspects and what forms am I to know you? How am I to see you? Because I can see you standing in front of me, but you say you are beyond this whole universe. So how am I to know you? How am I to see you? Because in the 9th chapter, you had said that Mahatmas, they always contemplate upon me. They always think about me. That's how they know me. So I also wish to be like them. So there is parichintayan means meditation. So we meditate, some of us, at least I hope most of you do. After you meditate in the morning, you come out, and from parichintayan, what it becomes? Chinta. We start worrying from chintayan chinta. Oh, I hope my son is doing okay. I hope my grandchild is doing okay. I hope my stock market is going okay. I hope that my, you know, all the time worry, worry, worry. That is the life of everybody. That's why they say, what is the difference between chinta and chitta? Chitta means the funeral pyre, and chinta means worry. So what is, they sound very alike, right? Chinta and chitta. The difference is that chitta, the funeral pyre, burns you only once and burns you when you are dead, right? But chinta burns you constantly, even when you are alive. It never stops. So that's what they say, stop worrying. That's what they say, don't worry, be happy. Surrender to God and let God take care of your problems and then stop worrying. So that's what, so he says, how am I to know you? Constantly meditate upon you. And the reason Gurudev says that, it's not that he wanted to learn how to meditate, how to go into the forest and meditate. That was not his goal, because at this time he was standing in a battlefield facing the evil Kauravas. And so he wanted to know how to function. So that's what they say. Bhagavad Gita was not taught. Most of our Upanishads were taught to very deserving students who were very spiritually, that had made their mind quiet, had purified, and then they approached the teacher, and sitting in the solitude of the Himalayas, the bank of the river Ganga under the forest, they were taught in extreme quietude. But this knowledge to Arjuna was given right in the battlefield when he was facing the greatest challenge, not only of his life, but at that time, there had never been as great a challenge where the entire armies, not only of the two cousins, but all the major kings of India had sent their armies and had themselves come. So it was a major conflict. So Bhagavan is telling him how to function in the world. So that's what he says, this knowledge, how am I to apply in this world? So as I was reading the commentaries, they say there are three or four steps that one has to take in applying this knowledge. First of all is reading. and studying that we already talked about. Then say you are sitting in the temple or you are meditating or you're doing your prayers, then your attention should be totally on God. Your mind should not wander. So attention should be on God. Whatever, whether I'm praying, as much as possible, if it wanders, bring it back and try not to bring extraneous thoughts. Then when I come out of the temple or of the meditation room, what do I do? They say chant the mantra. So each one of us should adopt a mantra that is related to our Ishta Devta, the form of God that we worship. It can be Om Namah Shivaya, Shri Krishna, Sharanam Mama, Om Namo Bhagavate, Vasudevaya, Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Whatever, for a Christian, it could be the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost. So any such short mantra which reminds us of God, one should as often as possible chant it. Whenever you have a moment, chant it quietly. When you're driving, you should be chanting as much as possible. They say it's hard to remember. So what they say, put little reminders on your mirror, bathroom mirror, put CM, I mean chant the mantra, on your microwave, on the dashboard of your car. You know, so put reminders so that it reminds you. And as often as possible, chant the mantra. Go to bed at night chanting the mantra. Wake up first thing in the morning chanting the mantra. So the more, and the chanting should not be done mechanically, not Om Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya. No, not like that. But paying attention to the sound and keeping the image of my Ishta Devta, of the Lord in my mind while I am chanting. So second is remember God as often as possible by chanting the mantra. And then the third is see God everywhere. You can start by seeing in your family, you know, my mother, Matra Devo Bhava, Pitra Devo Bhava, my mother and father are divine, are God. So start from there, then Atithi Devo Bhava, the guest is God to me. Then my family members, my spouse, my children, and then slowly extend it to the extended family, you know, my cousins, my uncles, grandfathers, and so on. And then go on to my people I work with. So people I contact with, my clients, you know, my friends, and even strangers. So slowly this should be extended to all humans. And then ultimately to all beings. Plants, you should not unnecessarily destroy trees or plants. Animals, you know, kindness towards animals, birds, plants, fish. So this slowly extends to the entire universe. Not only good, but also bad. See, for us, we say it is easy to see God in the mountains. You know, you see a beautiful mountain, you see sunrise, sunset, a flower. But how about a garbage truck that is going and that is smelling? That is God too. The ability to see the divinity in everything, good and bad, even in good people, even in bad people, God is there. The substratum of everything is that divinity. Yes, on the surface, it may appear that certain things you may, you know, may be pleasant and may not be pleasant, but inside one should have the acceptance that everything is God. And then, yes, you deal with situations as if something is dirty in your house, garbage. You don't say, this is God, I'm not. No, you pick it up and throw it, you know, that obviously. But inside, there should be. So that total acceptance of everything. So whatever you see is God. Everything I see is God. And then God is also transcendental. He is beyond it. So I have to expand my vision. Expand my vision to make it bigger and bigger, not very limited. They're only me, myself, and my family, but Vasudeva Kutumbakam. This whole universe is my family. That's what Bhagwan says. Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlabha. Bhagwan Sri Krishna says, it is very rare to find a Mahatma who sees this whole universe as God. And the example they give is that how. But then why does Arjuna want examples? Because say you go to India and they say, you know, there is this big industrial house. She said, what do they do? He said, they do everything. All businesses they are in. He said, no, no, no. Don't tell me all businesses. I want to know what specific business they are in. So they'll say, okay, they are in power production. They are in computers. They are in, you know, oil and gas. They are in textiles. So you get different examples. We say, okay, now I know that this company is very huge. They make cars, you know, all that. So similarly, Arjuna wants from Bhagwan, he says, don't tell me this whole universe is me. Please give me specific examples. I want to know where exactly you are. How am I to see you in this universe? I was listening to another commentary very beautifully. They say, it's like you go to somebody's house and you say, whose house is this? He says, this is my house. It's your house? Yeah. So he says, okay, is this cup yours? Is this glass yours? Is this chair yours? You don't go around asking. That is foolish, right? When he says this whole house is mine, then everything in the house obviously belongs to him. The cup, the saucer, the glass, the chair, the table. You don't ask for different examples. So similarly, you and I, when we are told that God is everywhere, everything is God, we say, no, 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 no. I want specific examples. Where can I see God? What? So that's, for a beginner, it may be okay. You know, for a wise person, all he has to hear is this house belongs to me. Then he doesn't go around asking, is this cup yours or this glass yours? You know, he understands. So similarly, you and I, when we are told God is everywhere, that should be enough. But Arjuna, out of compassion for us, we can identify with him because he genuinely wants to know and he wants to understand because he's still learning. So that is why they say that this chapter is given so that we can see how God is in everything. And then in the 11th chapter, how everything is God. So that is the example. And one should constantly remember, this reminds me of a very beautiful story. So there was this very rich banker, Jewish banker, who made a lot of loans and dealt with millions of dollars. And so he went to a rabbi once, just asking for some spiritual advice, a very famous rabbi. And so he says, you know, how am I to, you know God and remember God? He says, remember him at work. He says, at work, I am so busy, you know, and I'm dealing in millions of dollars. And if I make a single mistake, I have to check everybody's credit before I give them a loan. And then I have to see how the market is doing. Where I have time to remember God at work? You want me to remember God at work? So the rabbi says, okay, tell me one thing. When you are in the synagogue praying, do you remember your business? Yes, Rabbi, I'm sorry, I do. You know, even though I'm supposed to be praying, I'm all the time worried about the market, worried about my finances, and all the time I'm thinking about, when you are in your prayer room, do you remember your business? Yeah, I know I shouldn't, but in my prayer room also. He says, okay, if in your prayer room you can remember your business, why in your business you can't remember God? So the point of this story is that one should take every opportunity. You know, if you are seeing patients, maybe in between patients. If you are a pharmacist, in between customers. If you are cooking, whatever you are putting, all this is God. The masala is God. The salt is God. The food, the vegetables, fruit is all God, the one who I'm serving. So take every opportunity to remember God. And that is what is said in this shloka. Then another question which hasn't come up yet, but if you look at these examples, and also in the 7th and 9th chapter, Bhagwan has said, you know, the examples he has given, especially in the 10th chapter, only seem to be related to India. He says, like, among the rivers, I am Ganga, among the mountains, I am Everest. You know, among all the rishis, I am Vyasa, you know, all that. Among the Pandavas, I am Arjuna. So why are he only giving Indian examples? You think only the Ganga and Jamuna are holy? You think Mississippi is not holy? So the answer they gave is that the Bhagavad Gita was taught in India to an Indian, to Arjuna, who was a child of the Vedas. So his knowledge was the Vedic knowledge. So even the examples were given to him were related to India and related to the Vedas. If Bhagavan Sri Krishna was in the US and was teaching the Bhagavad Gita, he would give the example of Grand Canyon among the wonders, you know, natural wonders, I am Grand Canyon. So that's why the teaching is relative to the place where it is being taught. It is not that he only wanted to say that God is only in India, but that's where the teaching was happening. And Bhagavan briefly has already mentioned in the 7th and 9th chapter his glories, like he says, Rasoham Apsu Kaunteya Prabhasmi Shashi Surya Yoho, I am the taste in the water, I am the light in the sun and moon. And then in the 9th chapter, he says, Tapamyaham Varsham Nigranami Usrijami Cha, I am the sun that creates the rain, makes the water evaporate, and then it travels in the wind. So he has already in brief mentioned his glories, his vibhutis. So Arjuna just wants more detail. And so that's why Arjuna asks this question. Now we'll go to verse number 18, where Arjuna asks a little bit more about this same question. So verse number 18. Vistarenatmano yogam.
Vistarenatmano yogam.
Vibhutincha janardana.
Vibhutincha janardana.
Bhuya kathaya triptirhi.
Bhuya kathaya triptirhi.
Shrunvato nasti me mritam.
Shunvato nasti me mritam.
Together, vistarenatmano yogam. Vibhutincha janardana. Bhuya kathaya triptirhi. Shrunvato nasti me mritam. Oh, Lata, you are asking where the dot is used as na when it comes before cha. Vibhutin cha janardana. Remember in the chanting class? So in rare examples, ma becomes na when it comes before cha and then before cha like that. So there are certain places where this is chanted as na, but otherwise most of the time the dot means ma. So for everybody else also, when we say vibhutin, because it has come before cha. So that's one of the chanting rules. So vistarain, again, Arjuna says, vistarain, in totality, completely, I want to hear. Atmano, of yours, yogam and vibhutim. Again, he says, the yoga, how you are in this world, and vibhuti, how you are beyond it. So all your glories and manifestations, and cha, oh, janardana. Janardana is a very beautiful name of Sri Krishna. There are two meanings of this name. I was reading the commentary. One is Jana Ardana, those who are evil, Bhagwan Sri Krishna gives them problems. Again, it's not he does, but he has created this law of karma. And so one who is evil gets sorrows because of the law of karma that Bhagavan Sri Krishna created. So it is not that he gives sorrow, but we get sorrow because of our actions. But who made the law of karma? The Lord Janardana. That is one. Another meaning is Jana Arda. When Janas, when people approach him with humility, they are called Arti. You know, those who are suffering. When you approach the Lord with suffering, with humility, and if you have done the right actions, then he will take away your suffering. So that's why Janardhan is said to be both meanings. For the evil, it is punishment. For the good, it is a blessing. That's why they say he is Nigraha and Anugraha. Nigraha means control. Anugraha means compassion. So that's why he says, O Janardhana, please tell me all your manifestations and your transcendental appearances and your glories. Bhuyaha, tell me again and again. Bhuya kathaye, please tell me again and again. he tripti he, indeed I am not getting satisfied. I'm not satisfied. I want to hear again and again. You have told me in the 7th chapter, you have told me in the 9th chapter, but please tell me more, tell me in more detail, and we'll talk about this. Why? Shrinvata nasti. Even though I have heard many times, tripti nasti. I am not satisfied. I am not content. I want to hear more. That's what they say. This knowledge, one should keep on listening always, because never you should say, I am satisfied. I have heard. The more you listen, the more this knowledge becomes firm. Lifetimes of vasanas have created such firm grooves in our mind that only by repeated listening, fresh grooves can be created of understanding, just as the Grand Canyon. How was it created, that one river, by going rapidly again and again and again, constantly created this deep groove where it is now thousands of feet below. It's like 7 miles deep or something like that, several thousand feet, but it's 7 miles when you hike down. So same way, this knowledge should be again and again listened to. That's what he says. Na tripti shrunvata na asti. It is not for me. Why? Amritam. Because your words are like nectar. You know, they are divine words. Sri Krishna, when he spoke, it was like nectar was flowing from his lips. And he says, please do not stop. Just keep on talking and tell me about you. Tell me about your glories. So we see Arjuna's eagerness to know this knowledge. So to talk about this shloka, we see that he had a strong thirst, insatiable thirst. He says, I am never satisfied. I will never say, Bhagwan, it is enough. You have talked enough. No, you can keep on talking as often as you want, as much as you want. Tell me all your glories. Don't ever stop and keep on doing it. So that is the glory of the student. What a wonderful student Arjuna was. And that is why Bhagwan gave him this knowledge, the 700 verses. And then in the 11th chapter, also Bhagwan showed him his cosmic form, which we'll do in the next chapter, how the whole universe is in Bhagwan. So he showed him that. So why should we have such eagerness? Why do we have to keep on listening to this knowledge? So his commentary says that, first of all, there is regular knowledge, like you're studying physics or chemistry. You don't have to change your life. You know, you may be a physics professor, and he may be a physics professor, and still he may be at home drinking and partying and smoking. All he can still, you know, going to, you know, doing all kinds of things, but yet he can go to college and be a very good professor. He can teach very well. He has a great knowledge, or a chemist, or biology, or, you know, something like that. You don't become biology, you don't become physics, you don't become chemistry. You don't have to live your life according to physical teachings or chemical. You can continue to live your life as you are. You can still teach, you know, be a good professor, and you can have the knowledge. So you don't have to become physics, and you don't have to start living physics or chemistry. But spirituality is different, because it's not only that you have to learn this knowledge, you have to totally imbibe, where you become one with this knowledge. And then third is, you become this knowledge. That's why they say, Brahma with Brahma eva bhavati. To really know this knowledge, you have to become one with it. You cannot say, it's okay, I can be religious and then I, you know, can do whatever I want. My life has to transform. If the life is not transformed, then this knowledge is not doing its job. So the purpose of learning is, it has to be a transforming knowledge. It has to transform my thinking, and then it has to transform my actions, and I have to become one with this knowledge. So that's why the spiritual knowledge is very different from learning physics or chemistry or mathematics. Not that those sciences are not important, they are very important, but the purpose of learning that and the purpose of learning spirituality is different. So that is why they say that eagerness to know what Arjuna is demonstrating again and again. Tell me again and again. I am not tired of listening to you. I will never be tired of listening to your, you know, divine verses, your Amrit voice and all the teachings. So that's why the importance of satsang. Satsang means the company of good. Sat means good. Sang means company. Sat also means the truth. So company of truth. So company with these books, company with these masters, with these teachers. Satsang, that's why satsang is emphasized in everywhere. Even in Radha Swami, they talk about satsang. All the faiths, if you look at, they talk about that the association with these good in the form of life teachers, if you have other books, or nowadays on the internet, you can listen to talks by all the Swamijis. Actually, they just yesterday, if you go to Chinmaya channel, there is a very beautiful topic they just started yesterday. It's called Tapo Gita Fest. It is because Tapovan Jayanti and Gita Jayanti is coming up on Christmas weekend, December 24th. And so Chinmaya Mission is doing a worldwide yagna where every evening a teacher, could be from any part of India, is talking on each chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So yesterday Guruji spoke on the introduction. He introduced the subject, and it's already happened this morning, but you can listen on, go back online and go to Chinmaya channel, and it's called Tapo Gita Fest, F-E-S-T. And today you can hear the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. It is taught by a wonderful teacher. They have it in English and they have it in Hindi. And they're also going to do it in all the regional languages if you want to hear it in the regional languages. But just go to Chinmaya channel and please listen. And every day for 18 days, they will have chapter 1 to 18. So each day, one chapter will be summarized. So today you can listen chapter 1 and then tomorrow chapter 2. They actually talk on in the morning. I think it's in the evening in India. So it is very early morning here, but then it is on YouTube. So you can look at it on YouTube, Chinmaya channel. So that is why the benefit of satsang, a company of this knowledge. And so they all in the 18 days, all the 18 chapters of the Gita will be summarized by very good teachers, very prominent top Swamis of Chinmaya. So it is a great opportunity to study the Bhagavad Gita in brief. So here we see that the teacher and the student are both very anxious, very eager to learn. And Bhagavan Sri Krishna is eager to teach. Student wants to learn and teacher wants to teach. Otherwise, what happens? Sometimes the teacher keeps on talking and the student is looking at his watch. You know, what time is it? When will this teaching end? Or he starts, you know, getting bored, attention wandering. Or the teacher thinks, these guys are not interested. They don't want to learn. So he just comes and just speaks the minimum and goes away, just does his duty. Why? Because he gets a paycheck from the college. So he comes and teaches. So this is not like that. In this Bhagavad Gita, we see that Arjuna is a wonderful student. And of course, Sri Krishna, there cannot be any other teacher like him. So that is the glory of this teaching. Now, how can we find out why is Arjuna asking Krishna, Bhagwan, or in our case, Bhagwan is not here, but we ask maybe Swamijis, why do we ask? So I heard a very beautiful example. They said, like, suppose you meet somebody, an older gentleman, and he used to work in the White House. You know, when Clinton was president or when Bush was president, he used to work in the White House. Maybe he was not a chief of staff, but maybe he was even a gardener in the White House. But then when you meet him, then you say, you know, oh, you worked in the White House? Yeah, I worked in 1995. How was it there? How is the White House? And how is the furniture there? And how, you know, you want to know how is the security and what are the flowers in the garden? Or like somebody worked in Rashtrapati Bhavan. You know, Rashtrapati Bhavan has hundreds of rooms. It's so much bigger and has all these chandeliers and carpets and all this beautiful, you know, royal decoration. So you meet him and you say, oh, come on, can you tell me about Rashtrapati Bhavan? Did you ever get to see the president? Or did you get to see any VIPs? Did you get to talk to them? Did you see the president's children? So we always want to know, you know, what curiosity, you know, oh, this person worked in the White House or in the Rashtrapati Bhavan. So similarly, when we meet these masters, you know, these great masters, these great acharyas and swamis who have experienced this truth for themselves. In their meditation, they have become one with God. They have experienced oneness. They have understood this knowledge. They have studied it. They have lived it. Then you want to know, you know, oh, so you do that. How do you do that? How did you learn? And then you sit with them and you say, okay, can you also teach me how to meditate? Can you teach me, give me this knowledge and share it with me? So that's what they say, that one has to have the eagerness of Arjuna, that when you approach a teacher, please tell me everything you, and a true teacher will not hold anything back. See, that's another thing. For if he or she will say, I want the student not only to come to my level, but to cross me. That's why Tapovan Maharaj, when he taught Pujya Gurudev, Swami Chinmayananda, it pleased him, because Tapovan Maharaj stayed in the Himalayas and gave this knowledge, but then Swami Gurudev, Swami Chinmayananda spread it to the whole world. The glory of a teacher, that he doesn't feel jealous, oh, my student is doing so well. He's very happy that this knowledge that I have, and so that is what they say, that this is the beautiful connection of student and teacher that we see in the Bhagavad Gita, where Bhagavan Sri Krishna shares everything. At another place, he says, I have told you everything without holding anything back. And at the end of the 18th chapter, he says, has your ignorance been removed? Your moha has gone or not? You know, I have taught this knowledge over 18 chapters, 700 verses. And Arjuna says, Nashto moha smritir labdha. Tvat prasadat achyuta. O achyuta, O Bhagavan Sri Krishna, who never falls from his grace, it is because of your prasada, it is your grace, your blessings, that my delusion has been removed and I have got my memory back. Because Arjuna had studied all this, the Vedas, the Upanishads, he had studied. And Bhishma Pitamaya made sure that good teachers were brought to the palace when the Kauravas and Pandavas were growing up. Unfortunately, the Kauravas were, I guess, not sitting when the teacher was teaching, or they were not paying attention. But the point was that Arjuna had heard all this, and at the right moment, he had forgotten this knowledge. That's why he says, Smritir Labdha, O Krishna, you have reminded me of what is my duty and what is this highest knowledge that I had forgotten. And so I am ever grateful to you. So that's why we should always be thankful to Bhagavan Sri Krishna, Ved Vyas ji, for bringing the Bhagavad Gita, and then Pujya Gurudev, Swami Chinmayananda, who taught us this and has taught all these acharyas who come and teach us. So these three verses today tell us that Arjuna was very anxious to have this knowledge, and he wanted the knowledge in detail, vistaring. He said, don't hold anything back. I want to know everything about you, all your glories, where you are, how can I know you, how can I reach you, how can I see you. Everything, please tell me, don't hold anything back. So these three beautiful verses tell us the qualities of a good student, that how are we to learn, and what should be our eagerness to learn, and how we should approach a teacher. And then next week, we will be talking about Bhagavan Sri Krishna's reply. He will begin his teaching of the 10th chapter. Next week will be the last week for December. We will have a class on December 13th, and then December 20 and 27, because of the Christmas holidays, there won't be a Bhagavad Gita class. So we will only have a class on 13th. but no class on 20th and 27th. And of those of you who have children in Bal Vihar, Bal Vihar will only be on the 13th, not on the 20th or the 27th. There are a few more other announcements. I'll come to that. Do we have any questions, any comments anybody would like to ask about what we discussed today or
Anilji.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to say that I feel very blessed and thankful to Arjuna also.
Yes.
Because of him, he asked all the questions so that we can get all the answers what we have. So I feel really very blessed that Arjuna, and I really pray to him so many times too. So thank him.
Sure. Yes, yes. That's true. He should be respected. He was very close to Bhagwan, and then he got this knowledge and then shared it, you know. I mean, then of course Ved Vyas ji then transcribed it, put it in the Mahabharata. Yeah, so we have to be grateful.
Thing Guruji said yesterday was, you know, Arjuna was with Bhagwan for so many chapters here or before also.
So many
but
years.
He never asked him. So whenever student asks, then only this knowledge is given. So one should have the curiosity, what you were
yes.
mentioning, that unless you ask for it, you will not get. So you should have the desire to know.
Absolutely.
And you should approach the teacher.
Right.
Point,
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, same thing in the, because Arjuna had been roaming with Bhagwan Sri Krishna so many years. They were very good friends. He never asked. And also in the Upanishads, we find the teacher doesn't go out, you know, looking for students. The teacher stays in his ashram. If somebody wants to learn, he comes, he stays in the ashram, he serves, and then he asks the questions. So, yes, the knowledge should be given to students who ask. That is, yes. Yeah, Rajiv.
Yeah, Anil, on the 17th verse, you gave a few examples how we should keep on. So one was the reading all the time, remembering the God in everything that we do. Third was accepting things as is. Was there a fourth one to mention? I was writing it down and I could not write.
I think first is that your own experience in meditation and prayer. Second is chanting the mantra.
Yeah.
Chanting the mantra, and then third is seeing God. Start with your family and then expand your vision to everybody else, everything else.
So there were three, not the fourth one.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. One was the meditating and you know, your own understanding, you can say, reading and meditating, you know, you can say that, and then reading, and then if you can put meditation and prayer as the second. And then third is chanting the mantra, and then fourth is seeing everybody. So those are the four. If you want to count them separate, yes. Anything else?
Perceiving God with the limited intellectual capability of every individual. So the one equation other is the faith. Is that true?
The what?
Faith.
Yes.
Shraddha. Is that?
Yes.
One additional equation in that.
Yeah, it is an absolute requirement. It's not only an additional indication. It's an absolute requirement. They say faith and intellect are the two wings by which the bird, the student can fly to the highest. If you don't have the two wings, if you only have one wing, can the bird fly? No, the bird will just go round and round. For a bird to fly to the heights, it needs the two wings. So faith and right knowledge. So faith in God, faith in the Guru, faith in the scriptures, and faith in my abilities. That if all these other people have reached God, I can also reach. So not thinking, aray, how can I do it? I don't think I am capable. No, I have to have faith in God, faith in scriptures, faith in the Guru, and then faith in my abilities. And then the right knowledge through the scriptures. So when you combine those two, and then when you think about it, and the third very important is purity of mind. The mind has to be made pure. If the mind is full of rag, dvesh, anger, greed, jealousy, likes, dislikes, hatred, then such a mind cannot sit and contemplate, because then the mind is always running out. I don't like this person. I hate this person. Why is this person like that? You know, all that. So the mind has to be made calm through breathing, through meditation, through chanting the name of God, through listening and all that. So the more you develop faith and the more you purify your mind, remove all the impurities, anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, and all of these. As the mind becomes purer, then such a pure mind, when it gets the right knowledge and has the right faith, then the flight to God is then very easy. That's why he had heard in the you know, the 9, 10, 11 verses, where Bhagavan says, when you put the effort and get together and study this knowledge, then I myself come to remove your darkness and give you this right knowledge. So Bhagavan is always eager for us to turn towards him. Our problem is we don't have enough time. So you take one step, he will take 10 steps towards you. But we say, I am too busy, I don't have time, you know. We are very busy, but on the internet, we have no problem reading about Trump for 1 hour or anything. Yeah, we have no problem, you know, on WhatsApp, you know, spending, or on Facebook, how many hours we spend, my God. There we have all the time, but when it comes time to Bhagavan, we suddenly become too busy. So you say, because our priorities are wrong. But thank you. That's a very nice question.
Yeah. One other follow-up. The change in action happens once you have the knowledge, or action change, actions doing that, you will get to that knowledge.
I think they work together. As you get the knowledge, then you start acting. And as you act, your knowledge becomes firm, and then you get more knowledge. It's like medicine or like dentistry. You know, you start by studying, and then you start, you know, practicing on patients. And then as you practice, then again, your knowledge becomes, you know, stronger and becomes better. And then
any action has to be backed up with knowledge.
Action has to be backed up with knowledge. It's like cooking. You know, when you learn cooking in the beginning, you know, you burn so many things. But then as you work, you know, your cooking gets better. So then, and then you learn more recipes and go on the internet. So knowledge and action has to go together. Otherwise, if you have knowledge and don't put it in action, that is useless. Or if you do action without knowledge, then you will create trouble. It's like you start cooking without knowing, you will burn. Or if you start taking care of a patient without getting the knowledge, then you will hurt the patient. So, or in the case of a pharmacist, if he's giving medicine, he has to have the right knowledge, you know, which medicine to give for what condition. So the knowledge and action has to be together. If action without knowledge is harmful, and knowledge without action is wasted.
Okay. Thank you.
Good question. Thank you.
Okay. Om na tatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam nema vidyuto bhanti kuto yam agnihi tameva bhantam anubhati sarvam tasya bhasa sarvamidam vibhati. Om Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai.
Now,
Arati Shri Chinmaya Sadguru ki Devya Rupa Murati Karuna ki Arati Sadguru ki चरणों में उनके शांति समाए शरणागत की भ्रांति मिटाए पाप ताप संताप हरण की आरती श्री चिन्मय सद्गुरु की आरती सद्गुरु की वेद उपनिषद गीता को गाया धर्म सनातन फिर से जगाया शुद्ध नीति प्रीति शंकर की आरती श्री
चिन्मय सद्गुरु
की आरती Krishna Guru Ki, Dabari Ki Tapo Bhumi Me, Nitya Biraje Guru Hamare, Bhakt Hridaya Anand Stotra Ki, Arati Shri Chinmaya Satguru Ki, Arati Satguru Ki, Arati Satguru Ki.
Bolye Shri Satgurunath Maharaj Ki Jai.